Ecclesiastes, and you can turn there. We're going to be in Ecclesiastes chapter 3 this morning for our study as we work through this book. We're in chapter 3 now and working our way through it as we study on Sunday mornings. And I just want to mention one thing too. As you heard Pastor Jerry talking about the Easter Blitz next Saturday, and I want to be really, really honest with you. So maybe you can hear somebody say what you're thinking out loud. I do not like going door to door. I don't. I'm the first name on that list, and I'm going to go door to door. But I need you to hear this. I don't like doing it. I at times feel a little awkward about it. Like it's. I'm not a small talk person, and so it can be awkward and uncomfortable for me. But just because I don't always like it, and just because I don't feel like I'm good at it, and just because it might be a little uncomfortable for me, doesn't mean it's the wrong thing to do. And I think sometimes we get that impression and we get that feeling, you know, that I just don't love this. It's not my thing. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. Yeah, me either. And I'm going to do it. It's really simple to just knock on their door. Half the time people don't even answer, which is great for people like me because you're just like, all right, great. I'll just slide it in your door and I invited you. And half the time they do answer, which is great for people like me because it makes me have to talk about things I care about like my church. So I just want to encourage you, if that's somehow you find encouragement in what I just said, and that it's okay if you don't like it. It's okay if it's not your thing. Nobody anticipates you doing this every single Saturday and going every week and be like, I love going door to door. All we're doing is inviting people to church. What's the worst that could happen? They don't come and they shut the door. What's the best that could happen? They'll be here on Easter Sunday. So that's my encouragement to you. If you're on the fence, if you're like, I just don't love it, I don't know. It's only an hour, and it's really okay. I promise it's okay. It's a good thing to do, even if it's not your thing. So I'm giving you permission for it to not be your thing, and I'm also giving you permission to try it and do it anyway. So I'm saying maybe what you were thinking out loud, like, I don't love this. It's okay. So we're studying the book of Ecclesiastes, and we're going to be picking up in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. If you haven't been with us through the study up to this point, it's okay. Hopefully, you'll be able to catch up to speed. And in fact, today might be a good day for you to jump in because these are verses, if you're familiar with the Bible, or even if you're not familiar with the Bible, if you're familiar with the Birds song, Turn, 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 you're going to be familiar with some of these verses because they took the text, the lyrics from that for that song straight from these verses. But just to kind of remind us where we've been in the last, or at least what I've observed in the last few weeks, where we've been. I don't mean in the text; I mean in life. And maybe you can add a few things to this yourself. But in the last few weeks, you know, I've had my own time of sickness, right? Where I've been out, I've been kind of distant from people unintentionally, just because of sickness. But I've also observed other people navigate other things in life, particularly significant things in life. Some of you have navigated sickness, but last Friday we celebrated the life of Dick Long and acknowledged his passing into the next chapter of his life. And, you know, last Saturday, a number of you, some of you celebrated as Naomi McClellan was married and transitions to a new phase of her life, a new season in her life. Just recently, my cousin Jason, who's a little bit older than me and in the Air Force, told us that he'll be leaving for a 6-month deployment to the Middle East in April, and he's leaving his wife and his two kids behind. And they kind of thought maybe this had been behind them, but he's heading out on another 6 months of being absent and missing those things in life. You know, we've all entered into a season of higher prices. And maybe more cautious spending in our country. And I don't mean to, put that on the same level as, you know, losing a loved one or being on deployment for 6 months, but it's a season, right? It's a season where you've kind of paying attention. Things are changing and how you spend and what you can buy. And really throughout life, there's seasons of life-changing occasion. There are seasons of activity and life's pursuits. There's seasons characterized by emotion, where you look back and you say, man, that time in my life was characterized by deep emotion, positive or negative. There's seasons that are defined by relationships or seasons of differing standards in life, or quality of life. Seasons of differing personal responsibility. You are or aren't responsible for different things. And there's seasons of events that are even outside of our control, that we don't have any input on. And this is that idea. This is where the teacher turns his thoughts next in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. And some have called this the world's most famous poem on time. And like I said, if you were familiar with any of Ecclesiastes, you probably were familiar with the verses, some of the verses we're about to read, especially if you were into pop culture and media, because this is where the birds get their song, Turn, 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 from. It's based on these verses. And so I want to read you the first portion here of the teacher's words, Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 to 8. So he says this, he says, there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. There's a lot there, and we'll go through it, but the teacher's overstated point, if you can call it overstated, is that life happens in seasons, not the natural seasons like winter, spring, summer, fall, although it doesn't matter here anyway which season you're in, things happen, and it's snowing today because, you know, eerie. But life happens in other kinds of seasons, right? The teacher says that there's an occasion, there's a season for everything to happen in the course of your life. Some of them might be repeated. You might have repeated occasions, repeated seasons. Some might not be repeated, but life is not just one continuous, harmonious, uneventful season. There's a lot of them. There's a lot that goes on. Everything happens in life, and everything that happens in life happens in season. That's what he's saying. And so he explains and he gives an expansive list of the different seasons in which, in his perception, men find themselves. There's a long list of the different seasons people find themselves in. And he's going to use, you'll notice there's opposites, right? There's opposites. He's going to use this Hebrew technique where you read two extremes and you're meant to think then and everything in between. He doesn't say it, but you're meant to think everything in between. And so imagine with the first one in verse 2, where he says a time to be born and a time to die. Imagine that your the birth and death are connected by a string. And as he holds them up, a time to be born, a time to die, and you see the connecting string between the two of them, you're meant to see, oh, it's these and everything here. They're connected, and everything that goes between them, everything in between, they're all connected between those two events. And so he also seems to point out, so he wants you to think of everything that's involved, not just those one events, but the things that come between them as well that are in relation to them. But he seems to point out that the events of life are in categories, that there are categories of seasons. And I want us to think through this. And as we think through these categories that he presents us, that these everything in betweens, I want you to think which of these describes your season. Because you are in one or two or a lot of these seasons. And I want you to think that. Put yourself in that place and think, okay, which of these seasons, which of these categories am I in? And so the first one he points out there in verse 2 is that time has life-changing occasions. It has a season where your life dramatically changes. Irreversible events like birth and death. There's seasons where we celebrate life, and there are seasons where we struggle through declining health and death. So there's seasons for these life-changing occasions. And you may be in one of those seasons where you're celebrating new life, or you're celebrating maybe new potential in a healthier life, or maybe you're looking at the other end and you're going through a season of declining health, or you're grieving loss of a loved one, and or everything in between. Those are categories of life-changing seasons where things just won't be the same for better or for worse. And then he again gives seasons of activity, and he gives seasons of life's pursuit. Again, in chapter 3, verse 2. So first he says there's these life-changing seasons. There's seasons where people are born and people die. And there's a time to plant, a time to uproot, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to tear down, and a time to build. These are seasons of activities. These are seasons of life's pursuits. And he describes them. He said there's planting and harvesting. Right? Planting and harvesting, where you work and you have nothing to show for it. right? This planting season. There's seasons where you will work and you will work and you will work and you're going to look back over your work and there is nothing to show for it. You can't see any product, any yield, nothing. But then there's also seasons where you work and the harvest is there and you're getting and you're receiving and there's those benefits, right? You work and there's reward in your work. It's a time to plant and there's a time to uproot. There's these seasons of work and gain. There's killing and healing. There's seasons where there's conflict in your life or there's repairing of conflict in your life, right? Where there's seasons of tearing down and building. There's these seasons where there's just disuse of things in your life. Things are just falling into disrepair, or there's seasons where there's production and things are changing and working out and getting better in life. These are all pursuits that describe the activity of men, both good and bad. They're both creative and destructive, you see there in verses 2 and 3. And I want you to keep in mind as we look through these that he doesn't condemn anything about these seasons of life. He's not saying it's a good thing that there's a season to kill. He's also not saying it's a bad thing. He's just saying a fact. These are the seasons. We go through times where we seem to ruin everything. It's a season of killing. And then there seems to be a season where things are just getting repaired and we're fixing things and things are getting better. And it's a season to build up. He's just saying these are the seasons that people go through and they're necessary. They happen. They're necessary. These are the seasons that we live through. He points out in verse 4 that there's seasons of human emotion. And maybe this is you. Maybe this is your season. He says there's a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. These are seasons of private emotion. This weeping, it's private, quiet emotion, personally, alone, that define life. But there's or this laughing where you have just times of personal enjoyment. Privately, you're just enjoying life. And then there's seasons at the end of verse 4 of public emotion. It's public mourning, this public dancing that they explain our public lives, that just in general, we as an individual are out there and we're grieving over things or we're enjoying life. He points out in verse 5, there's seasons of relationships. He says there's a time to scatter stones and a time to embrace them or gather them. Sorry. He says there's a time to embrace people and a time to refrain from embracing. So there's seasons where we scatter stones or gather stones. And this may sound odd to you. This is a weird one. We don't do this very often unless you're, 4 or 5 years old and you like to collect stones and keep them, right? You're not often doing this. Excuse me. But what this describes is it's the practice of ruining someone else's field, going out and scattering stones into their field, making it harder to cultivate and till the land and plant, or helping make their field more fertile by going out and collecting the stones that are getting in the way of planting. These are seasons where we are at odds and damaging relationships, whether intentional or unintentional. We are out there and we are scattering stones into other people's fields and we are hurting people. We're damaging those relationships. They're not getting better. They're getting worse. And whether you're doing this on purpose and you're hurting those relationships or it's intentional and you're thinking, I don't know what is going on. It doesn't matter what I do. This just isn't working. But then there's seasons where you're repairing relationships. And you're going out and you're gathering those stones and you're making things better. And things are you're growing in those relationships that maybe used to be damaged. He says that there's some stages of life where there's seasons where we embrace or refrain from embracing. These seasons are characterized by maybe fellowship with friends and family. Or there's seasons that are characterized by loneliness and a lack of companionship. There's no one to hug. There's no one to embrace. And there's a loneliness there, whether that's intentional or not. He says in verse 6 that there's seasons of standards of living, quality of life. There's a time to search, a time to give up. There's a time to keep and a time to throw away. There's times where we're searching, right? We're searching and we have needs and we're looking to meet those needs. And that defines our stage of life. But there's also times where we give away, right? We have seasons where we find what we're looking for or where we have to let go of things. And say, I don't need this anymore. I have plenty. I don't need it anymore. There's times where we keep and we throw away. Seasons where we make do with what we have. I have to keep this. I can't go out and get something new. I have to keep it. I have to make do with what I have. I can't go out and get new things. We're just going to have to make ends meet. It's a quality of living, a standard of living. But there's also times where we throw away. Where I don't need it. I don't need this anymore. We can get rid of it. It's become not usable for me anymore. And I've got replacements for it. I don't need these things. We have too much. He's describing different ends of these phases of life. And he talks about seasons of personal responsibility in verses 7 and the beginning of 8. He says there's a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent, a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate. There's times of life, seasons of life that are defined by tearing or mending, by damaging our life and damaging the lives around us, or by fixing what's broken or being responsible for making things better. There's times when we are silent. There's times when we speak. These are seasons in life where our voice feels anonymous. We aren't confident. We aren't in charge, and we're silent. But there's also seasons where we're the one who's being heard. We're speaking, and we're confident, we're vocal, and we're in charge, we're making those decisions. And we have those seasons where sometimes we're not the one making the choices, and sometimes we are the one making the choices, and we go back and forth between these different varying levels of personal responsibility. So there's seasons in life where we love or we hate, where we prioritize and we choose what's most important, and we focus on that while we identify those things that aren't worth our time, that we turn our back on those things. And that phase of life is defined by our pursuit of what we love, or our vendettas or rejection of those things that we hate. And then finally, he says at the end of verse 8, there's also a season of events that are outside of our control, that they affect us just as much, but there's nothing we can do to them. There's a time for war, and there's a time for peace. And there's seasons of war, there's seasons of peace. There's times where life is negatively affected and damaged by society, by external forces. And there's times where life is peaceful and easy thanks to external forces. You've done nothing for it, to get it, to have it. But there are those times when things are going fine because of society, and times when things are bad because of society. And I'm sure many of you are imagining what current events as well. And you're thinking, that's absolutely sure. There's a time for those things. There's a season of that. And again, the teacher's point is, these things just happen. Everything happens in life. And there's a time when everything will happen to you, when these seasons will come on you. And I'm sure as you're listening through these things, you're hearing some of the seasons that you are in now, or you've been in. But I want you to think of those seasons you're in now. They can overlap, they can double up. But I promise you, you're in one or two or many of the seasons he just described. Those times in life that he's identifying that everybody goes through. And then he asks the question of the hour. He lists them all. He doesn't give any commentary on them. He just says, here's the seasons. Here's what happens in life. Good or bad, this is what we go through as people. And then he asks the question in verse 9, what do workers gain from their toil? And when he says, what do workers gain from their toil, I want you to imagine, because this is kind of what he's imagining as he writes it, I want you to imagine ants in an anthill, going through those different seasons, going about their work amidst the seasons. And his question is, what do they gain? What do we gain from day after day after day after day, in season, out of season, seasons changing, occasions happening, and moving on? He asks, why? What do you get out of toiling through life's changing seasons and the good and the bad? How are we supposed to think about the truth that, okay, I get it, life just happens. There's a season for everything. How do we process that? How are we supposed to think about that life just happens in seasons? And the answer is, without God, it's meaningless. Verse 10. He says, I've seen the burden that God has laid on the human race. I've seen it. I've seen the burden. And his statement that may sound familiar to you, because he's recalling something he said early in the book, where he said that the burden is that men have to toil through life without meaning, without purpose. That's the burden. And he says, I've seen it. I've seen it. And without God, the why is just meaningless. All these seasons and going through the different events in life is meaningless. Without God, there's no purpose to it. And so in our text here, he's identifying that navigating all these seasons under the heavens, he says in verse 1, this is under the heavens. Everything that happens to men, everything that you go through in life, the season that you're in right now in life, whichever one or two or three or nine that it is, whatever season you are in your life, under heaven, without God, is meaningless. What do you get out of toiling through the life's seasons? The answer is, without God, nothing. You get nothing. You're right. It's meaningless without God. And this is the struggle. This is the struggle without God. If you're going to live your life without God, without the belief in God and living like God is real, you are going to struggle through all of these seasons for nothing, for no reason. It will be meaningless. You need a true belief and relationship with God to find meaning in these seasons. And we're going to talk about that here for the next few minutes. Because I'm going to make an assumption about you, because you're here. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but be honest if I'm wrong. We believe in God. We have a faith in God. We believe that He exists. We believe that He is the Creator. We believe that He is the King of Kings, and that it is worth it. That it is valuable. It is invaluable to trust Him and trust His Word and pursue those things. We believe in Him, and we believe that it's worth it to pursue the truth that God gives us in His book. And we believe that we can live in relationship with Him through Jesus. So how do we think then? Because we believe in God. And if we believe in God, then it's not meaningless. So how can we think then through these seasons because we believe in God? How can we think biblically about living through these seasons? The seasons that you are just reminded that you are in. You are in those seasons. I am in those seasons. And the teacher has the answer, because he believes in God too. So because we believe in God, how do we live through and think through life? Look at verse 11. He is God. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that people will fear Him. Whatever is has already been, and whatever will be has been before. And the reason I stop there is because the next line is the introduction to the next section. We'll talk about that in a few weeks. So without God, living through the seasons is just more meaningless toil. But because of God, there is, the author says, beauty within that time or that season. And I want you to hear that. And you're not going to believe me, some of you, because of the season that you're in. But the season that you are going through in your life, because God exists, there is beauty in it. There is beauty in that season. Yes, even your season. The teacher says that God has made everything beautiful in its time. That word beautiful means good. It means appropriate. There is good in every season. God has put it there. It doesn't mean that the season is good. It doesn't mean that the season that you're going through is good, is great, is wonderful, it's fun, it's enjoyable, it's the best. That's not what it means. It means that there is good in your season. And this isn't even, although we see this in other places in the scripture, this isn't even a, there will be good, just be patient and wait. There will be good in your season. Just give it time. No, this is a, there is good from God in your season. There is something beautiful from God for you in that season. He has made everything beautiful in its time. There, both the good seasons and the bad seasons, God has made, not will make, He has made everything good, beautiful within that time. It's what He does. He inserts good into your seasons. And this idea that God inserts good into every season, He makes everything that is beautiful and He puts it into your season, this drives what the teacher says in verse 12. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, parentheses, through their seed, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. You recognize that phrase? There's nothing better. There's nothing but good to do. There's nothing better for people to do than happy and do good while they live, right? To find, eat, drink, and find satisfaction. We talked about this phrase. He said it 2 weeks ago. This isn't we might as well be, you know, just live for today. Might as well just eat, drink, and be merry. It's not what he's saying. This is a reminder that those enjoyable things are gifts from God. That you have those to do because God has inserted good gifts in your life. And so when he says that I know it's better for people to be happy and do good, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction, what he's saying is there's a gift from God there. And you might as well find it in the season. Find the gift that God has placed there. The best thing you could do in your season is find happiness by finding the good that God has put in that season. Because God makes everything good, everything beautiful in your season. He puts it into your season. He inserts it there. So find it. The season that you're living through, the time that you're in, find the good that God has put there and enjoy it. And that's our first takeaway this morning. Because we believe in God, find God's good gifts in your season. They're there. because he makes everything beautiful within its season. Anything that is good, it is in there. God has put it there. He has inserted it there, and he's done it so that you'll find it. So that in the good and the bad seasons, you will find God's gift, and you can still say, man, this is enjoyable. Find his good gifts in your season. They're there. They're easiest, and let's be honest, they're easiest to identify in the good seasons. Right? God's good gifts are easiest to identify in the good times. It's easy to find those during the birth season. It's easy to celebrate the gift of life, right? To celebrate those things and see it and be appreciative of it. And man, that is a good gift from God. But God's beauty and goodness are there just as much in the seasons of death. Find it. Because God puts those good gifts in there for us to find in every season. It's easy to find them in the good seasons, but I promise you they're there in the bad seasons as well. It's easy to notice God's good gifts in the building season, but God has inserted beauty into those seasons of disuse and disrepair as well. Find it. And we jump all over the God's good gifts in our seasons of extra and not needing, but what about the seasons of need? What about the tightening of the belt? God has inserted good gifts into that season as well for you to find. So find it. What about the seasons of laughter and dancing? Do we see God's good gifts just as much in the seasons of weeping and mourning? Because they're there. In every time of your life, God has made something beautiful. In every season and phase of your life, God has made something beautiful, and he has put it there for you to find it. He's put it there for you to stumble into it and be surprised by it. So find it. Find those gifts like the teacher does. They're in every season. And the reason that God does that, the reason God puts good gifts into your seasons for you to find, the teacher tells us at the end of verse 14, the reason he does that, he does it so that people will fear him. So that people will fear him. And so clearly the word fear here doesn't mean what we think it means, because who would put good gifts so people are afraid of them? Right? That can't be what this word means then. The word fear here doesn't mean be afraid of the guy who drops good gifts into our lives. It's a Hebrew word that means revere, be in awe of, worship, submit to him, fall on your knees because of it. God makes every season in your life beautiful, and he inserts a good as a gift into every season so that you will worship him, not later, but now, in that season where you recognize you gave this to me. Thank you, God, for giving me this gift. So we find God's good gifts in the season, and we worship him because of it. We thank him. We acknowledge his working even within that season, because God puts beauty in every single season, both the good and the bad. And we find it, we acknowledge it, we recognize it, and we thank him for it. We acknowledge how he worked, that he's an awesome, he is a good God. Why would you give this to me in this time, during this phase of my life? I don't get it. I don't deserve it. I don't understand it, but thank you. You're a good God because of this. He wants to. He does make your season of loneliness just as good as your season of fellowship. Find it. There's good there. There's good in every season. But God puts it there. Find it and worship him for it. Let your heart grow in affection and love for him because of it. Imagine it like him just leaving little presents for you to find throughout your day and to go, who put this here? I love you. Because that's what it is. Let your heart grow in affection for him because of it. Give him your time. Give him your attention. He's trying to get it. He's trying to get you to acknowledge it and acknowledge him and not be so caught up in the season, but to look at that and think, man, you want to talk. You want to remind me that you love me, that you're there. Find the gift and worship him in both feast and famine. So which is harder for you? Is it harder for you to be in awe of God when you have or when you don't? Is it harder for you to worship God and thank God and celebrate God when everything's great or when things are tough? When you're happy or when you're hurting, because both seasons are intended to drive you to recognize the good that God inserted into that season, find it, and worship him because of it. Without God, there's no good to find. And without the good, the seasons are meaningless toil. But God puts good into our seasons for us to find these good gifts, these beautiful things. He puts them into our seasons for us to find, see, and worship him and be in awe of him and appreciate his goodness, appreciate his love, appreciate his care, his concern, his paying attention, knowing that we would stumble on that good thing when we needed to. Because he knows us. He loves us. He cares for us. And so find his good gifts in the season and worship him. But there's more. Finding God's gifts in each season should also remind us that God does. That God does. That God is always doing. And he's always been doing. That God is doing. that he's the sovereign actor, that he is the agent, he's the king over all creation, and he is doing, even in your season. Look at verse 11, the last part of verse 11. The teacher says, no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. And then again in verse 14, we know that everything God does will endure forever. God is doing, God does, and those good gifts that you find, when you find those good things, when you find the beauty in the season, it should remind you that God does, that God is doing things. Every little sliver of God's goodness, every little piece of beauty that he inserts into your season points to a bigger story, points to a bigger picture, points to a bigger author, a bigger artist, where you found a little piece of it, you found a little bit of the paint that dripped off the canvas, and it should make you look up and notice, oh God, God put this here. God is doing. He's still painting. He's still involved. Let it point you to the bigger picture. Every time you sense that you found some of God's good in the season, let yourself be reminded and reflect on the fact that there is a God and he is doing. He's doing something. And he has a plan that is greater than the seasons, that you're just giving the little paint drips. But there's a much bigger picture. There's a much bigger plan. And God is in the process of painting it. And that these seasons, that they come and they go, but the plan is bigger than the seasons. And what God does spans beginning and end of those seasons. What God does will endure forever beyond those seasons. And it is solid. It is unchanging. What the teacher is saying is find security outside the changing seasons in your unchanging God. Your security isn't in that season. Because that season's going to change. Things are going to, but those little pieces of good that you find should remind you that my security isn't in this season. My security is in the God that's bigger than this season. My security is in the God that's painting the bigger picture from beginning to end. He is doing. He does. My security is in an unchanging God, not in this changing season. And because God is who he is, then he has allowed the season in your life and he's inserted good into them for you to find it and to worship him. And all of that is part of God's bigger beginning to end forever enduring plan for your life. I want to say this. This may be really hard to hear because some of your season really, really hurt. And it is hard to hear that this season is part of a bigger plan. I get that there might be good in it. But this really, really hurts bad. And I'll tell you this, they hurt because of sin, not because of God. They don't hurt because of the artist. They don't hurt because of the painter. They hurt because of sin. I'm not saying they hurt because of your sin, although that's possible. But I'm saying that sin is the cause of the pain. Sin is the cause of the death and the decay, the hurt, the grief. God doesn't cause those things, but he inserts good to coincide with those things. He inserts beauty to go along with those things. And he's telling you to find the good that God has inserted into that bad season. And that's not meant to trivialize the bad season in your life. It's only meant to remind you of the truth that for every hurt that you have, there is good because God has put it there for you to find. And know this too, that sometimes we are too close to the season. We are in the season and we're looking right back at it. And our perspective and our view is too close to see the plan, to see the enduring plan that God has. But I promise you, God is doing and God does. He's a plan from beginning to end. And we're too close to see the plan, or we're too near to the pain to understand that. But you can trust him. You can trust him. And you might not know the why right now, but there is a why. Trust God. There is a bigger picture. Joseph learned years after his brother sold him into slavery and abuse that God had a bigger picture he was painting. But I imagine from the depths of that well, it didn't seem like it. But even there are pieces of be good to find. And your jagged, fragmented, broken season is part of a stained glass that God will one day reveal to you for you to see. So find the good gifts and worship him and know the season will change and find security that your God is unchanging, that he is doing and his good gifts are reminders of that, that he is still working and that he has a full picture in mind and he wants to reveal it to you one day. But know that that revealing is contingent on one thing very important, and that is your salvation. But if you aren't saved, if you don't believe in the salvation that Jesus' death offers you from the penalty of your sin that should be paid in hell, if you haven't believed in your heart that Jesus defeated sin and defeated death on your behalf because you can't defeat it, If you haven't declared your conviction that Jesus is your Lord, that he lives through you, that he chooses, he decides, he acts, he thinks, he's the king. If you don't have that saving faith, that relationship with Jesus, then you won't see the reveal of the big picture in your life. And this seasoning is me. But if you have that faith in Jesus and God, know that there's a tarp covering a stained glass window in heaven. That when you get there, God is going to pull it off and you're going to see that little bitty jagged fragment of the season that you're in. And you're going to see the big, beautiful picture that God is making. Because God is doing, God does. He is unchanging in this changing season of your life. Find the good. Find the pieces of color. Find those good gifts. And know that God does and he is doing. And trust him. Find security outside the season in your unchanging God that you know he is doing, and one day it will be done, and worship him. And that's why we claim this verse in that Paul writes to the Romans in Romans chapter 8, verse 28. And it's familiar. It's maybe some of you. It's your promise. It's the one that you hold on to, that we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him. They've sacrificed and given themselves to him, who've been called according to his purpose. They have his salvation. There is a big stained glass window for you to see one day of your life, but you've got to believe in God and trust him and his salvation to find the reveal, to find the meaning and the purpose. Last thing, we need to find God's good gifts in the season because they're there, and worship him because of it. And don't find security in that season. Find security in outside the season in your unchanging God, the one who is over and above, who's beginning and end, who's painting a much bigger picture than the little piece that you're in. But he also, the teacher says, in verse 11 again, in the second sentence there, he says that God has also set eternity in the human heart, yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. No one can grasp what God has done start to finish. We live trapped between time and eternity. And the teacher points out that we weren't designed for time as we understand it. We weren't created for this roller coaster of life seasons. When we were created, God placed eternity into our hearts. We were made for an eternal world. We were made for an eternal existence. And inside us is that longing for eternity, that longing for the knowledge of eternity. Because at one point, that knowledge was there, and then sin took it. Sin corrupted everything, and it gave us a very limited view. And so we long to know what God knows, because we were designed to be a part of what God is knowing and doing. And we long for that knowledge of eternity, a desire to know what God knows, beginning and end. We want to know it, start to finish. But instead of knowing those things like we feel that we feel like we should know, we want to know why, but we don't know them. And because we don't know them, we're tossed and we're rolled by the changing seasons with little answers. Why? And this is why we have to find the good. Why we have to find the gifts. Why we have to find the beauty and worship God and find our security in our unchanging God, in his unchanging nature. But again, we have eternal minds and we're bound by time. We're trapped between time and eternity. And it's why we crave those answers, because it's in our heart. It's in our soul. But we can't know right now what God has done. We can only know and trust that he has done it and he is doing it. And so when you face a new season of life, when you enter into the next season of life, when you resolve yourself to find the good gifts in the season and worship God in your season and secure yourself to his unchanging nature, let those very responses to the season make you long for eternity. Let the changing season make you long for eternity. When you go, well, this is new, I wonder why. Let that make you long for eternity when the seasons no longer change. And recognize that God has placed this eternity in my heart for a reason. And with every season's ups and downs, as you feel your if you feel the entrapment between time and eternity, and you ask yourself the why, when you feel that entrapment, you feel the longing to know without the answers, let it increase your longing for when you can grasp what God has fully done in your life from start to finish. Long for eternity because the changing, realizing, man, this is quick. That one was fast. And the next one is going to be quick too. But eternity and that season is so long. And you won't have to search for God's good gifts. You won't have to find chances to worship him. You don't have to find your security outside the seasons, because it'll all be there in front of you. And so as you go through these ups and downs, these roller coaster seasons, let it make you long for eternity. As you recognize, I wasn't made for this roller coaster. I wasn't made to be bound in these seasons, in this time. God placed eternity in my heart and long for them when you see the full story the author wrote. The full canvas and work of art is unveiled. But you better make sure that you have the saving that guarantees you're going to see. And if you do, if you are here saying, I believe in Christ, he is my Lord, he has my salvation, he paid my debt, whatever the season that you are in, there are good gifts. There's something beautiful there that God left for you to find, notice, look around. Who put this? Worship him. Find your security in him because he's unchanging and long for the day that the seasons stop. That's how we can get through these and enjoy them even to the best of our ability. I want to pray for you if you'd pray along with me. God, we are each in seasons and as we reflect on what we've heard this morning, there are those in this room that are identifying bad seasons in their life, tough seasons, difficult seasons. Sometimes we need neon signs for us to see the good. Would you be merciful and gracious and make it very obvious to us where the good gifts are? Help us to find those things, grab onto them and hold them and celebrate you because of it. Help us to have the kind of faith in you that secures our opportunity and our eternity to see the full picture and trust that you are doing, you've always been doing. You're doing good for us now, but you have a plan beginning to end, and one day we get to see it. And praise you, God, for that. Help us to find that encouragement today as we walk out in this season of our lives, that there is good and there's beauty, and there's a God who we can trust, and there's an eternity to hope for. I love you, God. I love you so much. I pray all this in your name. Thank you. Amen.